Once again, we continue our Bible study series into Christ's command, in this manner, therefore, pray. This was something that he mentioned to his disciples, and I'll just do a quick sum up of what we've looked at so far. I mean, the so-called Lord's Prayer begins with the statement, Our Father in Heaven, which we connected directly to the first of the two commandments, You shall have no other gods before me, and you shall not make for yourself any carved images. And the reason that is so is because we have a real Father in heaven. So much of the world today is lacking a relationship with a Father. So I think the concept and the idea of having the privilege of praying to our Father in heaven becomes more important with the passage of time. The second point had to do with hallowed be your name, which connects directly to the third commandment, you shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain. And then the third one, thy kingdom come, connects directly with the fourth commandment of the ten, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. The Sabbath day is about a lot more than just resting one day in seven. It reaches all the way back to creation. Exodus chapter 20 says that, and Hebrews chapter 4 points us forward into the future and connects it to the millennial reign of Jesus Christ. And then we came to that problematic, or challenging, should I say, statement, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven, which evokes visions of having to comply with and to overcome, shall we say, the battle of wills. But as we saw in our study, it is about more than that. It is also about a promise of assurance of salvation, because it is the will of the Father that Jesus Christ loses no one from all of those that the Father brings to him. And then comes what might be called, by contrast to the previous statements, a very earthly request. Give us this day our daily bread. And that's the topic of today. It seems, by comparison, very earthly. You know, bread, food, sustenance. Suddenly we have gone from great spiritual platitudes like our Father in heaven to the earthly, even beggarly appeal to, quote, give us this day our daily bread. So if you look at that in contrast, it is quite a shift. Our Father in heaven, as we studied, is talking about a great spiritual reality and destination in which we become the literal children of the universe-creating God. And now we are to ask for bread. Give it to us daily. Now how the conversation has fallen. No longer are we talking about being children of the one true God, no longer are we appealing his kingdom to come, in which his will would be done in earth as it is in heaven. No great eternal destiny, just food. The conversation, in this manner, therefore pray, has definitely, shall we say, come down to earth. Or has it? You know, notice what Christ told the Jews on his day, on the day after he had performed a miracle with bread. And they told him, our fathers ate the manna in the desert, as it is written, he gave them bread from heaven. That's in John chapter 6. And we'll spend a good bit of time in John chapter 6 this morning. Jesus had just fed the multitudes the day before was 5 loaves of barley bread, which provided him a platform from which to present a profound answer to this earthly question. Bread. Daily. And here's what he said. quote, "Most assuredly, I say to you, Moses did not give you bread from heaven, but my Father gives you the true bread from heaven. For the bread of God is he who comes down from heaven and gives life to the world." You know, sometimes we tend to look at Scripture in sections and segments and forget the context in which it was. Jesus Christ, the day before the great discussion in John chapter 6 about the bread that comes down from heaven, had just made an enormous earthly statement by feeding multitudes with 5 loaves of barley bread. This gave him a platform to discuss the real bread. He continues by saying, "I am the bread of life. He who comes to me shall never hunger." In that same passage, he says, "He who comes to me doesn't hunger, and he who believes in me shall never thirst." So, you know, I'm doing a little bit of a digression here, but maybe not much. And if you look at the process of salvation, the Father draws, the individual must come, and in doing so is promised to never hunger. But there's another component, and that is to believe, as we read in the next chapter of John. John chapter 7 talks about what I have termed as authentic belief and the powerful nature of the promise of the Holy Spirit that would enable us to do things that are humanly impossible. So coming to Jesus Christ and believing in him in a real way, I'm not talking about professing, provides a promise for two basic components of sustenance, bread and water. I know, you know, bread and water, you know, all you get is bread and water, has been a common human refrain down through time. But bread depicts more than bread in most cases. It's kind of synonymous with food and sustenance. So my question is, in what we have just read, do you still think that the conversation, "In this manner shall you pray, give us this day our daily bread," has dropped to an earthly level? And you see that this request actually connects directly to Jesus Christ, because he told the Jews of his day, and by extension us, that he is the true bread come down from heaven. So I'd like us to consider two components of this appeal, and then we will look at some connections, and then we'll come back and look at the two components, and this is going to be a little bit different, because you'll find that while we have two components, they're so interrelated that we're going to jump back and forth between them. But the two components are, number one, give us this day, and number two, our daily bread. So you have, as component number one, a request that talks about, shall we say, a timely delivery, daily bread. And number two, an apportioned amount. Now, I'll get back to this, but I'll just say this. One of the questions I wanted to ask, and actually I think I know the answer to it, but, you know, what would be wrong with weekly bread? You know, at least a week's supply, so that, you know, what would have been wrong with God opening up the Red Sea as the Israelites were coming around the bend on the mountain, instead of creating all that stress of Pharaoh behind me and the mountain to my right and the sea to the left? So I want you to kind of keep that thought in mind, because it speaks to a fundamental human issue. But for the moment, let's look at a fundamental premise in connection with this that's recorded over in Proverbs chapter 30 that I think explains something important. At least it speaks to me in my life, and I will share some personal experience with you, if you don't mind, this morning, and on how I have experienced this daily bread thing and the tension that it creates with having enough for today and just enough, but maybe not a plenty. But let's go over to Proverbs chapter 30, because I think this is a very important point to us. It's a similar statement to what Paul said, that he said, I have learned to be abased and to abound. You know, and to be content in whatever the circumstance. Here we have the wisdom of Agur, and I didn't take the time to find out who he was, but and he writes here, but I'd like to pick up the narrative here in verse 7. Two things I request of you, and he's speaking to God, two things I request of you, deprive me not before I die. So the first thing was, remove falsehood and lies far from me. And the second thing was, give me neither poverty nor riches. Give me just enough. Why? Feed me with the food you prescribe for me. Notice how that connects back to, you know, feed me my apportioned amount daily. You know, there's a, and I'll talk about this a little bit later, there's a daily routine that is created. I mean, we sleep daily. I mean, most of us do. Some of us more than others. You know, we eat daily. There's a routine. I mean, why not work? Wouldn't it be more efficient to just work for 40 hours straight and then sleep for, say, 20 or 30? 40 hours straight, sleep. I mean, what about this daily routine? What about, I mean, why daily bread? You know, the sun rises and sets. I mean, there is a rhythm that occurs here. And you see here that he says, feed me with the food you prescribe for me. It's a prescription, an apportioned amount, daily bread, just in time. And here in verse 9, we find out the reason why. Lest I be full and deny you and say, who is the Lord? I mean, I can do this on my own. I've got an entire week's worth of bread. And if we're hoarders, you probably have month's worth. Now, again, just to qualify, I'm not suggesting we should do what most people do, and you just have a day's worth of stuff. There are proverbs that talk about, stocking up for the winter, or something that I grew up in. We would can in the summer so we'd have food in the winter, and we would be well served to do more of that. We're talking here about the way we look and worry about life. Lest I be full and deny you and say, who is the Lord? Or, by contrast, lest I be poor and steal and profane the name of my God. Daily bread, delivered on time in the prescribed amount. You see, this connects with, you shall not steal, the eighth commandment. You know, if we do not get our daily bread, the temptation to steal is very difficult to resist. It connects with, you shall not covet, the desire for riches. You know, the minute people have an abundance, and abundance is something that is relative, depending on what you're accustomed to. And it's strange how I've observed this to work. You know, we've seen this with employees where you think you're doing a good thing and pay out a bonus and bad things happen. Because of the dynamic that is of not being able to handle it. And again, I digress. I think here is there are so many lessons that we learn by living God's way that we don't even think about. One of the big benefits, aside from the fact that going to the feast and having second tithe in abundance, it's just the benefit, we are to learn to fear the Lord, and by learning how to handle and share appropriately a lot more than we would normally have actually is a training process for us in which God can test us to see whether or not we are capable of handling more. Because we see here from the proverb that if I be full, the temptation is to deny Christ. And that's the third commandment. That's not one of the ten that I would connect this particular appeal to. And that is, you shall not deny me before men, or I will deny you before my Father in heaven. Those are Jesus Christ's words. So when he's asking us to pray for bread on a daily basis, it is for our own good. It builds faith. It teaches us to rely on God. I remember, and as I said, I'm going to share a couple of personal things with this. In a minute, we'll get back to the point. When we came into the church, it was a very difficult and risky decision on the face of it. Because we left the lifestyle that we had known from birth with a 400-year history. And you relied upon your family for pretty much everything. Or the community. And to leave that was very risky. And I remember, and especially for a young man with two young children and another one on the way, the idea and the fear of not having enough to eat and to somehow not be able to support those two little children was something that was very, very real to me, because I saw it as a distinct possibility, because I promptly got myself fired and had for quite a while no access to unemployment benefits because it was initially denied. For reasons I won't go in here at the moment, but you know, and that set off a whole slew of emotions, because I was concerned about not having enough to eat, and I remember being completely out of money, and then going to the mailbox and finding a check that was just enough to get us going. Daily bread. And for me, that was an important point to come to, because it taught me to begin to rely and look to a different source for daily sustenance. Oh, it was an earthly thing, food. Very earthly when you've got two hungry children. I mean, I would, and I think most parents would do that, I would go without food to make sure the kids are fed. And so we started down that path, and then just to kind of give you an idea of where I was at, so we were coming to the Canton Church, and people were very generous, and, you know, John Foster was the pastor at the time, and he would ask me, John, you guys doing okay? You have enough food? Oh, yeah, we're fine. We're fine. Are you sure? You know, he said, we can help. Oh, no, we're fine. Proud German, you know. You know, we go bale grass, you know, and make tea, you know, dandelion salad, you know, whatever. So, and we just had enough, you know, just, but the cupboards were getting barer by time. So finally, I summed up all the humility that my pride could spare and went up to him and said, you know what? He said, We really could use some help. I mean, the idea of taking a handout for me was just, I couldn't do it. He said, I figured that. So he said, I'll stop by this week and we'll sit down, we'll go over everything and we'll get you what you need. And he did. He came by, we sat down, my wife was there, cupboards are bare, you know, we had, Susan's incredibly efficient, if you haven't noticed that. But I'm much more. I mean, she gives me a weekly allowance. So, I mean, I get an allowance because I'm much more inclined to. Oh, yeah, just we bought oatmeal by 100-pound bag and mixed it into the hamburger. You know, you can put about a 50% mix in that, and it goes a lot farther. And it's, I mean, there's nothing wrong with it. It's very nutritious as well. So, I mean, that's how we were stretching the food. So, but eventually, I mean, it kind of runs out. So he came by, we sat down, and he said, well, how much money do you need? And I forget what the numbers were, but he came out with an amount, and I said, oh, no. I said, we don't need anywhere near that. And my wife, being the submissive lady she is, she sat there and thought, you idiot, you know. He said, okay, so what do you need? And I don't remember the sum. It was a couple hundred bucks that I finally agreed upon. And he gave it to us. My wife went and bought groceries and some more oatmeal because she knew she'd have to stretch it, put more water in the soup, as the country song goes. So we did that. That went on for, I'm going to say, 3 or 4 months. And somehow we just could not quite keep up. We just couldn't quite, we had car problems and we had something else went wrong. And just when I thought, and by that time I had a job, just when I thought, you know, we were getting ahead, it didn't quite work. And I don't remember exactly how this happened, but I came to myself and I thought, you know what? Here I am inadequately providing for my family because I am too proud to accept help. I understood the it is more blessed to give than to receive concept. I was learning about daily bread and learning about looking to a different source. And I find it interesting, the source at that point was the church. So finally I went back and I told Mr. Foster, and I mean he's heard me tell this story before. I said, need to talk to you about how we're doing. And he said, yeah. I said, when you came down and talked to us, I was not entirely honest with you. I didn't tell you about all our bills. And he said, yeah. He said, I figured that. And I'm kind of like, really? He said, yeah. He said, you know, he was not dumb. He knew we had two kids. I think by that time we had three. And even Amish efficiency can't, you know, turn 5 loaves of barley bread into a truckload. So we sat down again, and I I bared my soul, and he gave us an amount, I don't remember what it was, but we covered everything. And from that time forward, it worked. Until, I mean, the next challenge, which I'll share with you, came along. But that taught me that, you know, when we're talking about and asking God to give us our daily bread, we have the assurance from God that that will be provided if we do not interfere ourselves. I was interfering. There was bread that was wanting to come my way, but I was pushing it away because I didn't like the source. I was too proud. So let's go back to Exodus chapter 16, and I want to go through that entire chapter because I think it teaches us about daily living, daily sustenance, and how God worked with the Israelites and by extension all of us in this basic human need. We all need food and water and shelter. Now, of course, there are a lot of other needs that we have accumulated over time, but when it comes right down to it, we need food, we need water, and we need the ability to have enough shelter to get out of the elements. And in our society today, that is something we, you know, probably don't understand in the way we should. But if we go back to Exodus chapter 16, we begin the chapter with them having journeyed to Elim and them murmuring about not having food. In verse 3, the standard refrain about bringing them out to the wilderness to kill them. And, you know, their memory of Egypt was very different from what at least the Bible records. Oh, that we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt. They were suicidal. When we sat by the pots of meat and when we ate bread to the full, for you have brought us out into this wilderness to kill us, to kill this whole assembly with hunger. You know, when we pray, give us this day our daily bread, we better hope that daily bread is provided because people do some very bad things when they get hungry. And our relative peace that we enjoy as normality would turn into something entirely different if our transport system were to break down for even a week. And people get hungry. It turns into anarchy very quickly. Then the Lord said to Moses, behold, I will rain bread from heaven for you, and the people shall go out and gather a certain quota every day, daily bread. You know, the whole discussion, I mean, this is probably the most dramatic story about bread in the Bible, at least in the Old Testament. Perhaps the New Testament, the example of Jesus Christ converting 5 loaves into food for thousands and then having 12 baskets left over would be similar. But at least in the Old Testament, notice that this story is consistent with the framework of prayer. It says, the people shall gather a certain quota every day that I may test them whether they walk in my law or not. The giving of daily bread and apportioned amount is connected directly with a test to see whether or not we are willing to go forward in the way of God. That was the test for me. It was a big one because we switched sources of supply. One is very visible and very comfortable and very reliable. The other one was, from a human perspective, very unreliable, untested for me. You know, having food in the Amish community was never a question. We raised our own, and if somebody didn't have it, it would be supplied. I think the same is true. Well, not I think. I know the same is true in the church. Nobody will ever go hungry in the Church of God so long as there is food. I learned that. But here we see that God wanted to give them a certain quota, and if you look in your margin, and if you look at different translations, the original Hebrew actually is talking about a daily portion. Everybody was to gather their daily portion, and we'll get to the amount that was here in a little bit, to test them, whether they will walk in my law or not. The reason we pray for daily bread and not weekly, monthly, or yearly bread is to learn and to be reminded daily of our reliance on the true bread from heaven. Because at the end of the day, it's bread, Jesus Christ, and water, the Holy Spirit, that gives us the sustenance to live by the principles and laws of God on a daily basis. It's a daily occurrence, not a weekly. Yes, we come here every week to worship. I mean, there's a weekly cycle as well. But fasting for 6 days doesn't usually work that well. One day, for me, is not difficult, but if you go about three, I mean, it gets to be pretty challenging. And we are reminded in a very physical way of our need for daily sustenance. Continuing in verse 5, and it shall be on the sixth day that they shall prepare what they bring in, and it shall be twice as much as they gather daily. Then Moses and Aaron said to all the children of Israel, at evening you shall know that the Lord has brought you out of the land of Egypt. And in the morning you shall see the glory of the Lord, for he hears your murmuring against the Lord. But what are we that you murmur against us? Also Moses said, this shall be seen. When the Lord gives you meat to eat in the evening, and in the morning bread to the full, for the Lord hears your murmuring which you make against him. And what are we? Your murmurings are not against us, but against the Lord. I mean, this is at the kind of the beginning of the journey, where God was being patient and I think understandable at their concern and murmuring. I mean, later, God and Moses become a little bit more aggressive in dealing with the constant murmuring after God had demonstrated in so many different ways that both bread and water would be provided. Bread on a daily basis, and water coming out even of a rock. Now, verse 10, it came to pass, as Aaron spoke to the whole congregation of the children of Israel, that they looked toward the wilderness, and behold, the glory of the Lord appeared in a cloud. And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, I have heard the murmurings of the children of Israel. Speak to them, saying, at twilight you shall eat meat, and in the morning you shall be filled with bread, and you shall know that I am the Lord your God. You see, the fact that God provides on a daily basis is a test that the Israelites fail, but we are to learn and understand, and that is to know that the Lord provides, that the Lord is God. They didn't seem to be able to get through that particular lesson. So it was that quails came up at evening and covered the camp, and in the morning the dew lay all around the camp. And when the layer of dew lifted, there on the surface of the wilderness was a small round substance as fine as frost on the ground. So when the children of Israel saw it, they said to one another, "What is it?" For they did not know what it was. And Moses said to them, "This is the bread which the Lord has given you to eat." And it talks about then the amount, which we'll read in a minute, but another personal story, if you'll oblige me. During that same period of time, we relied heavily on our garden to eat. And we came into the church. The first day we attended was the first day of unleavened bread in 1995. So it was in the spring of the year. And we planted a garden, a large one, and we also had strawberries. And we woke up one morning, on a Sabbath morning actually, and we had a late frost. Our strawberry patch had been white with flowers. And to our chagrin, it was just like, this is our manna story. It looked like frost, and it didn't just look like it, it was frost. It was a hard frost. And it was like, we just lost our strawberry crop. And what you would have normally done, because if you can get out there before the sun is up in the sky and you apply water, you can at least substantially reduce the damage. But it was the Sabbath. So what to do? It was a test. So I didn't do what, someone of my background would have normally have done, and that is to go out and take care of the problem yourself. I like to do that. I like to solve problems. I prayed. We had the biggest crop of strawberries that year we ever had. And it was a remarkable, I prayed that God would provide, and frankly, not thinking that something would come of it. How you explain it, I don't know. It was a frost, it was documented, it was white. But the amount of strawberries we carried in at a few, 3 or 4 weeks later, it was also documented. They were there. Somehow, either the damage was taken away or new blossoms were replaced, but it was our manna. It taught me that walking in the law of God, in this case, not compromising the Sabbath, or that compromising the Sabbath in the name of food was not necessary. Continuing, "This is the thing which the Lord has commanded, let every man gather it according to each one's need, an omer for each person, according to the number of persons, let every man take for those who are in his tent." So, every man gathered it according to each one's need, an omer for each person. Now, you think about it and you say, "Oh, okay, here is God rationing. Only an omer." Well, an omer is in dry measure is 1.92 quarts, 2 quarts, roughly a half a gallon. Per person? You ever tried eating 2 quarts of bread in a day? It was pretty abundant, I would say. Maybe this is just me, but somehow when you look at that and you think, okay, they were out there, gathering up this stuff, and it was just enough. That daily manna. As they came to look at it, after a while they looked back, and this stuff that you give us each day. When in actuality, daily quota of 2 quarts is more than enough. But they weren't so interested in daily bread. Notice the story. I mean, they wanted more. And the children of Israel did so and gathered some more, some less. So when they measured it by omers, he who gathered much had nothing over, and he who gathered little had no lack. Every man had gathered according to each one's needs. And Moses said, let no one leave any of it till morning. Daily bread. Literally, daily bread. Notwithstanding, they did not heed Moses. I mean, just like I was offered relief and didn't take it. It may be more blessed to give than to receive. But somebody has to receive in order that it can be more blessed for someone else to give. We all, I think, have to go through a period in our lives, perhaps some of us more often than not, where we're on both ends of the reciprocal, where it reciprocates, giving and receiving. And, you know, often we think of it in material things, but giving and receiving is a dynamic that happens all the time in all kinds of different ways. So they gathered it every morning, every man according... Oh, sorry, I missed verse 20. Notwithstanding, they did not heed Moses, but some of them left part of it until morning, and it bred worms and stank. And Moses was angry with them. They did not have the confidence and the faith to do what God said, and that was to gather enough for a day, and gather enough for a day. And then we come to the sixth day. Verse 22, and so it was on the sixth day they had gathered twice as much bread, 2 omers for each one, and all the rulers of the congregation came and told Moses, and he said to them, this is what the Lord has said. So now we're taking bread and teaching which day the Sabbath occurs. Just like Jesus Christ took bread, multiplied it to provide a platform for him to teach his people about the fact that he is the bread of life that provides spiritual daily sustenance. This is what the Lord has said. Tomorrow is a Sabbath rest. Notice the indefinite article A, meaning that it's not the only one. There are also annual Sabbath. A Sabbath rest, a holy Sabbath to the Lord. Bake what you will bake today and boil what you will boil and lay up for yourselves all that remains to be kept until tomorrow. So here you have the concept of the preparation day, to prepare food in advance so that we have less work on the Sabbath in preparation. So they had laid it up till morning as Moses commanded, and it did not stink. So earlier in the week, this first week of testing and training, when they kept some over until the next day, it turned sour, it turned bad, it stank, and it had worms. So daily they were to collect their bread. And then when the Sabbath came, God took the same, God showed that you keep over until tomorrow on any other day except the preparation day, it turns bad. But if I do it on a Sabbath day, it works. So there was a physical demonstration, both of the power of God and the importance of the day of the week. Then Moses said, eat that today, for today is a Sabbath to the Lord. Today you will not find it in the field. 6 days you shall gather it, but on the seventh day, which is the Sabbath, there will be none. Now it happened that some of the people went out on the seventh day to gather it, but they found none.
It just, nothing changes.
And the Lord said to Moses, how long do you refuse to keep my commandments and my laws? The test is whether we are willing to rely on God to provide daily bread. And, you know, as our, I'll tell you another daily bread story. As we go through life, you know, the principles don't change, but the magnitude of the tests and the challenges do. The story I told you earlier was back in the mid-80s. We had a similar but bigger challenge in 2008. On January the 12th, or was it 2007? I forget now. I think it was 2007. My wife came to me at 6 o'clock in the evening, and I was working on a machine out in the plant, and she said, we have a problem. I said, yeah. I mean, it's not that uncommon for someone to come to me and say, we have a problem. It happens usually a couple, 4 or 5, 10 times a day. And she said, yeah, we have a problem. And that's when I realized, okay, this is a special kind of problem. And what was special about it is that some computer hackers from Ukraine had hacked into our corporate bank accounts and not only drained all our accounts, they had managed to hack into our lines of credit, which we had just charged a couple weeks before for a big project that we had going, and they managed to drain that as well. So that we went from having, you know, we just say, a lot of money available to us, most of which wasn't mine, and they sent it to Moscow. We had payroll the next day. Now it wasn't just about our daily bread. For the next month, from January through, I'll tell you the end of the story too. We were literally looking and relying on God for the daily bread of roughly 75 people at that time. It just worked, just barely. Just enough money would come in every day so that we could make payroll, turn, and keep going. We should have never survived that event. And it's not my purpose to tell you all the details, but obviously there were thieves involved. The bank was, like big banks are, not cooperative at all, even though it was their security that arguably had caused the problem. That was January the 12th. Somewhere along in February, I told Susan, I said, I don't think this problem is going to get solved until Passover. It just felt that way somehow. So we were back to the daily bread. Our daughter, who at the time was living in California, did what she couldn't afford to do, and that was bought us two tickets and said, come to California and just get away for the weekend, because for all intents and purposes, we were broke. Well, more than broke. So we took Passover here, flew out, had the first day of unleavened bread in California, and I had turned off my cell phone on the first day of unleavened bread, and then after the Sabbath, I turned it on, and I had a voicemail. As in the weeks prior, I mean, I hired the, my law firm told me this was too big for them, so they recommended that I hire one of, shall we say, the nastiest law firms in Akron. He said, that's what I need. And, you know, if you think of a nasty law firm in Akron, that maybe it was everything I detest about lawyers. But they were, like I said, what we needed at the time. I had a message that was left for me on the first day of Unleavened Bread from our lawyer, said, John, I have good news. The bank settled. And a week before, they were anything but willing to do anything. That was a momentous lesson for us. Because, like I said, it was back to the lesson of daily bread. In this case, it was really not about us. I mean, Susan and I know how to live on very meager means. And it was really about the fact that, you know, we had one employee that we had just moved across the country who was building a house, relying on our daily bread. So, you know, God delivered that. It gave me a lot of confidence to go forward. But, you know, circling back to what we read in Proverbs chapter 30, you don't want to be rich and you don't want to be poor. You just need to be somewhere in the middle because both have risks. And that is why I believe that Jesus Christ asks us to pray. Give us this day our daily bread. Let's go over to Matthew chapter 6, because here's the common human tendency, you know, or maybe I should speak for myself. Maybe it's just a German tendency. I kid you, because I don't think so. But here's how we fret. I mean, this is the antithesis of give us this day our daily bread. Verse 31, therefore do not worry, saying, what shall we eat, or what shall we drink, or what shall we wear? Food, eat, water, drink, wear, you know, physical shelter. The three things, the three basic things that human beings need, Jesus Christ said, don't worry. And if you read verse 30 now, if God so clothes the grass of the field, which today is and tomorrow is thrown into the oven, will he not much more clothe you, O you of little faith? So for us to question and to ask for weekly bread is simply a demonstration of our lack of faith. Continuing in verse 32, for after all these things the Gentiles seek. I mean, that's what everybody else is about, you know. 401ks, I'm not against 401ks, you know. The size of my savings account, the, you know, my retirement account. I'm not against retirement. I'm just saying it's an issue of reliance. But seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things shall be added to you. Therefore, do not worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will worry about its own things. Sufficient for today is its own trouble. Doesn't say give us tomorrow's bread. We get up in the morning, we ask God to give us this day our daily bread. Because we'll turn back to Proverbs to conclude. Because if we, being human, if we would do anything else, it would likely turn into what we read today. Read here today in verse 8 and 9. Give me neither poverty nor riches. Verse 9, lest I be full and deny you and say, who is the Lord? That's the problem with an overabundance. Or by contrast, or lest I be poor and steal and profane the name of the Lord. So I hope that that has given you and me some confidence and a deeper understanding into the instruction to pray, give us this day our daily bread.